Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the ongoing evolution of our consciousness. And when I say consciousness, I mean all parts of ourselves, and that includes the dream time, our dreaming world, our dreaming reality, whatever those dreams are, whatever a dream is. We'll be talking to tonight's guest about Lainey Dolphin. She's a Gestalt therapist. She's a dream analyst. She's the founder of Dream Interpretation Center in Montreal. Welcome, Lainey, to the program.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi. You know what I like about you is that you are so easy to talk to.
Well, the feeling is mutual.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's why people open up to you about their dreams, because dreams are such a private, personal affair that it's hard sometimes to share what our nocturnal dreams are, what our daydreams are.
And they're very revealing, especially about something that's going on in your life this week.
I know, and that's and in a way they're so complex. It's and they mean so many things on so many levels. Where do we actually begin to start to talk about something like this?
Well, that was a great question. And that's one of the reasons I really like you. You're a very good interviewer. The thing
well,
with
just,
me is
yeah.
that I'm very eclectic in my approach to dream analysis. And I basically use the frameworks of Freud, Jung, Adler, and Perls. But so I'm a style of person who likes to go deep into the dream. Like, but not first of all, not everybody likes to do that. If my husband, for example, dreams that he was flying on a cow last night, he just wants to know why the heck he was flying on a cow. He doesn't want to go into how does this reflect his early childhood relationship with his mother. So he doesn't want to do the Freudian thing. He just wants to know, why did I have that dream last night? And I think that that's fine because, you know, some of us like to go more surface and some of us like to go deeper. And any knowledge is good knowledge as far as I'm concerned. It's a lot better not going to work in the morning thinking you're a weirdo because you were dreaming that you were flying on a cow last night. You're better off knowing what it's about. So I always do the first things first, which is, why did I have that dream last night? And the dream at the very first level is always about something that either happened to you yesterday or something that you thought about. And some kind of event this week is what triggers the dream that you have tonight.
So you literally mean what happened. It's not, it's always something within our immediate awareness. This is your.
That's right. So I will do that first. And then if I'm working with a dreamer who's not like my husband and wants to look deeper into the dream, then I know how to do that too. And I love doing that.
So the first level of something, it's always about, but it's always about something that now affecting us. I mean,
yeah, you know how our conscious mind, when we get up in the morning, prioritizes our day, like who do I have to call? Who do I have to email? You know, what radio show am I doing today? Like, so we prioritize our day. And if you had 5,000 things happen to you today, and when I say things, I'm including thoughts, feelings, everything that happens to you today. If you have a couple of thousand things happen to you, when you go to sleep tonight, your subconscious is also going to prioritize the one thing that's bugging you the most. And all of your dreams tonight, really, the dreams are just you having a discussion with yourself, testing out different possible solutions and reactions to that very specific issue that's bothering you. So the great thing about the dreams, and this is why I do dream analysis and why I help people, I teach simple steps about how to uncover the dreams. And the reason I do it is because the solution to what is bothering you this week, of course, comes to you in your subconscious mind before it gets to your conscious. So if you can only understand what the heck you're trying to say to yourself, you can propel your problem-solving skills. And that's like where I come in. I do two things with a dreamer. The first thing I do is help the dreamer uncover the link, the mirror. What is the issue that you're discussing with yourself? And it's not that I'm like a dream interpreter per se, I'm a dream analyst, which means that I have the right questions to ask the dreamer. And I don't tell you what your dream is about. I ask the questions and you end up telling me what your dream is about.
I think that's a really good point to distinguish between an interpreter and an analyzer. The analyzer, in a way, doesn't so much care about the interpretation. And they care more about the person and its relationship to the unconscious or subconscious.
Exactly, because if you had a fight with your girlfriend last night, how would I have any way of knowing that? You know, so you'd have to be asking the dreamer questions, especially since I work with an awful lot of people come to me through the site who I don't know. And so I'm asking questions based on the dreams that they're telling me.
Like, your site again is, what's your site called?
It's called haveagreatdream.com.
Have a great dream. And then, of course, you apply this all to your waking life. But let's go back to that first level. But actually, before we get to the first level, which we're going into, what is a dream? And how do dreams actually manifest in our minds? This might not be in your field, but, you know, we go to sleep, whatever that is, sleep. I mean, it's such a strange experience. And then we have these visions or these nocturnal hallucinations that seem very real at the time. But what is all that going on?
Dreaming is just another form of thinking. And all those pictures and metaphors that you're getting, that you're seeing at night, you're also getting them during the day. So for example, I'm speaking to you right now, and if there's something about my accent or the intonation in my voice or this or the level of my voice, that deepness that reminds you of a teacher that you had in university, you don't realize it, but right now your subconscious is flashing a picture of that person, and the only reason you can't see her is because you're distracted. You're distracted because you're awake, the lights are on, you're talking to me. So there's all this distraction that's stopping you from seeing what you're thinking. And that's what happens when you go to sleep at night. Distractions disappear, and you actually get to see the images that are flashing through your mind anyway. So it's not like the thinking during the day and the thinking at night are really not that different. It's just what I do is try and make the action a little bit more fluid. May I give you an example that I use often, and I think it'll make it very clear for anybody that's listening. About I'm 61 now, and about 20 years ago, I was at the place in my life where I was studying Adlerian dream analysis with actually the American Dr. Leo Gold. And during that period of time, I was working on, now I have to back up on myself and just say something to you. When we are born, we come into the world whole. We have like a plethora of possibilities, I call them. We have the ability to be shy, to be assertive, to be a hero, to be a chicken, to be selfish, to be giving. We have every single potential when we're born. And the people that bring us up teach us that it's more cool to be one way than another. So for example, if you grow up in a home with siblings, you probably get the message from your parents that it's not okay to be selfish, because you hear things like you better share your toys or go look after your brother. And so you get those kind of messages about this give and take kind of thing, where if you're brought up in a home as an only child, you don't have to share your toys with anybody, and you learn to become what Frederick Perls called over-invested in, you know, being okay about being selfish. It's not a bad thing. It's what you're more accustomed to, or their knee-jerk reactions, or Freud called them our habitual reactions to life situations. So we become like over-exercised in certain aspects of our personality and under-exercised in others. So you know those people that whenever you ask them something, they don't know how to say no? They say yes. Every time you ask them something, they always say yes. You know people like that?
I think I might be like that.
People like that are probably underinvested in the aspect of their potential to be selfish. So you might have a desk full of paper and so much work to do, but if somebody is coming to ask you to, you know, to come over to their house tonight or to go to a movie with you, and the real truth is you don't really have the time and you really need to be focused on all that stuff that's on your desk and how you really, really want to catch up on your work, but you are under-exercised in that part of yourself that knows how to feel comfortable saying, you know what, I'm just too busy, I'm really sorry, I can't join you tonight, I'd like to take a rain check. So they go to sleep tonight because you end up going to the movie and you're not paying attention to yourself because you haven't known how to access that ability to say no because you were brought up in a home with siblings and you learned that it's not okay to be selfish. You see, you get where I'm going with this?
I do. It actually reminds me of a dream I think I had. I mean, I had a dream last night. That,
okay. I'll just finish up by telling you. You go to sleep tonight and you dream about somebody that you went to school with. And I would say to you as the dream analyst, why don't you tell me, using a symbol's point of entry, why don't you tell me very quickly, what are the first two or three things that come to your mind when you think about that person? And the first thing that you would say to me is, guy was so selfish. He was so self-involved and so selfish. It was always all about him. And I would say to you, once I would understand that it's about this friend who wanted you to go to a movie at the first level, right? Yes. I would say to you that the appearance of that person who you associate as being so totally selfish is actually the solution to the current issue, and that you need to become more like that person that you thought was so selfish. So like totally can't say no because you're too giving, then you will dream, you won't dream about somebody who was a little bit selfish, because if you're all the way over on one side of the spectrum, you will choose a symbol or a person who is all the way over on the other end. And that would be your subconscious, your healthy subconscious, trying to move you somewhere into the middle. So like, you're not going to become like that guy that you knew at school that was so selfish overnight, because change is not that easy, but it most certainly is possible. And if you know how to uncover why you have certain people that appear in your dreams, you might discover that those people are maybe the solution to a personality trait that you need to begin exercising. Maybe next time somebody asks you to a movie when you really don't feel like going, once you've got this awareness in your conscious mind because of the dream, maybe you'll take a stab at it and say, no, you think, like, I'd like to take a rain check because I'm really too busy right now.
Right, but those things seem to like happen to us every night, and probably four or five times a night. I know I have different dreams, and
but when you analyze them, yes, they are not different. They're just different stories, all about the same subject. Like when I wrote my first when I wrote my book, this is years ago already. And I'm more accustomed to being on the radio than I am on TV. Actually, at the time, I had never been on TV. And I was invited to do Good Day New York. And I knew that I was going there after the Christmas holidays. And so, you know, like leading up to that time, all my dreams were very different. But I remember once I had a dream about a ghost. And when I analyzed my associations to a ghost, what did it mean? It meant I'm scared, because I was scared to go on TV. And then I had another dream where I was standing on the abyss of a cliff, completely different than the ghost dream. But the point is, I was standing on the abyss of a cliff. And what did that mean? It means I'm scared. And then I had another dream where I dreamt about my grade 5 teacher. And what does that mean? It means I'm scared, because I was scared of her. So the pictures are completely different. The dreams are completely different. But the message is, I'm scared, I'm scared, I'm scared. And that's called rote. That's what we also do in our subconscious. And because of the rote, I was able to ask myself, what are you so afraid of? Like, what is going on here? What are you so afraid of? And I was able to connect it to the fact that in January, I was right after the holidays, I was going to go to New York and be on TV. And that's what I was scared of.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, thank you for that. And I appreciate it. Let me tell you a dream I just had last night, because it's still fresh. And maybe you could keep working through your way of understanding and going through levels and levels, if you wanted me to do that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not a major dream, but I do remember in the dream I gave my computer to this friend of mine who's also a very rich Hollywood producer. I think I gave it to her to look at some ideas, but after I gave it to her, I couldn't connect with her. I couldn't find her. I mean, she was supposed to be someplace and I looked for her, but it wasn't like she disappeared, but I just couldn't reconnect with her, although she kept giving me messages or calls about where to find her, and I just had a hard time getting back to her in my computer, which I think represents my ideas or whatever. But
well, that was
like that. It was
that's very good. Okay, so you're already starting to work with the symbols, and it's a Hollywood producer, did you say?
Yeah, so she's a friend of mine, but she also does film. You know, she does big films. I mean, she's been successful in the film world. So, and she's a friend, and you know, we talk about ideas. So in the stream, I gave her probably something on my computer that had these ideas, and she said she'd look at it, but then I couldn't find her again.
You also, you mean, didn't have your computer anymore?
I didn't have my computer, which panics me. And then she had it. I mean, I trusted her, but still, I wanted to reconnect with that.
Right. So now what I would want you to do is completely forget about the dream.
Okay.
Even about her, or that this is necessarily anything about her. And when did you have the dream? Today?
Yeah, last night. Yes, absolutely. Just last night.
Fresh meat.
Yes.
So, because it's usually easy, it's easier to connect with. So the same as I said about that business, about being able to say no, when, you know, about being, to access that selfish part of ourselves. Like if, you know, so I wouldn't be asking you to look for something in your life this week that you're in a complete panic about, because the dream is giving you that panic. I would be asking you instead, what do you think is going on this week that's making you feel uneasy, like a little nervous?
Well, I wouldn't say I was panicked in the dream, although it was maybe borderline that. But I do feel, now that you say that, that this coming year, there are some big projects that are coming to me, and I'm not sure how I'm going to handle it.
Excellent. And so you're not sure how you're gonna handle it. So if your computer, as you say, are your ideas, you're not sure. Do I hear you saying that you're not sure about what ideas of your own you're having trouble getting in touch with your own ideas about how you're gonna handle these big projects?
I don't know if I would say my own ideas. I would say not in general.
Because the plot, like we worked with the symbols a little bit, and I tried to do a point of entry with the feelings, which helped you, because then you were able to connect to this panic thing or something that's making you feel a bit worried about the new year and the new projects and how you're going to handle them, correct?
Yes, that makes sense. Yes, yes.
Feelings point of entry. But thing for me about this particular dream strikes me is the plot, because I love working also with the plot. And in this dream, you're trying to get in touch with, like, you're trying to get somewhere, you're trying to make a contact with her, and it's not really working out. And that's like like that's what strikes me more than the fact that you gave away your computer, or that it's the fact that you're having trouble getting in touch with somebody, like getting, and so it's like, is it that you're having trouble getting your ideas across, your new ideas across?
I think, I don't know about new ideas. I'm having, I think I'm worried about how it's all going to unfold. It's not maybe so much about ideas, but how am I going to handle these bigger situations or something like that.
That's what you're having trouble getting in touch with.
Yes.
How
yes.
you handle the situations.
Yes.
Yeah. There, so now let me ask you about her. What are the first two or three things that come to your mind when you think about her? What style of person is she? Is she happy-go-lucky? Is she a workaholic? Is she like...
She's a generous person. She's, you know, can be very businesslike, though. She can be very, in a way, professional, but she's also a good, happy person, in a way. She's not a cutthroat type of person, but she probably has aspects of herself in that, but I don't see it because we're friends, but, you know, very professional in some ways.
Very professional.
Yes.
And also, I'm taking notes quickly because I like to use the language of the dreamer, and you also said that she's very businesslike.
Yes.
So for me, it's like, and so this is, even though we're on the radio, of course, I have to ask you honest questions, and I always ask dreamers to try and connect with it, because for me, it's never an accident who are the personalities that we dream about. And so I would say, similar to the example that I used in the explanation about, you know, dreaming about somebody from school that you thought was very selfish during a time when you need to access that ability. And so if you're a person who's more loose, because I don't know you that well, but I do know, especially also, of course, because of your show, you're very like creative and loose, and you don't seem like you're very rigid. That's the word I want. You don't.
Well, yes, I mean, as you're talking, I'm realizing that I should be, and this is maybe what's coming, is that I should be more businesslike. This is what I'm getting from what you're saying, and the part I'm having I have a hard time with sometimes.
But you're also having a trouble getting in touch with that part of yourself in the dream.
Yes, I'm exact. Thank you. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, as you say that, it's like, yes, I'm having trouble getting in touch with the bit. Exact. That is great. You're right.
Tell you what I find also very positive about this dream, mm-hmm. very positive, is that, and I'm back to the plot. Mm-hmm. It's not like she disappears on you in the dream. She does not disappear, because I didn't maybe write it fast enough.
No, it's true. She doesn't disappear. I just can't.
Her number. Didn't she give you didn't she phone you and leave a message?
She did. Did I say that? But it's true. No, she did. She's been in touch. I just had a hard time
getting back. But
I
you could have told me, Alan, that in your dream, this person like disappeared, took your computer and disappeared, and you can't, and you have no idea where that person is or even how to get in touch with them. But what's very positive about this dream and telling me that you're making some movement in this way is the fact that she does, maybe you're having trouble getting in touch with that part of yourself. Okay, I agree. But the point is that part of yourself is trying to get in touch with not absconded, the business part of yourself.
Right.
Potential to be more business-like is not you are trying to get in touch with yourself. This is not something that this isn't your first day working on this issue. That's what I think.
You know, that's very, yeah, because you know, you're absolutely right. I do know I have this business sense, and in some ways, if I want to get like a little more personal, I disconnected from it because I saw how business has killed my father, in a sense. He was overworked himself, and it actually really did kill him in a way. So I've avoided a parts of that. I mean, that's not in the dream, but that's just like.
But it some. is in the dream, and I'm going to tell you how. There's another point of entry I have. Like, I have six points of entry about decoding the dream, and then I have about seven or eight points of entry when you're looking for the solution. But one of the points of entry is called puns and play on words. And you use that all the time in our waking life. Like, I could say to one of my youngest daughter, get over here, I'm going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And if I talk like that, if that's the language I use, she might go to sleep tonight and dream that somebody's trying to kill her. And I might go to sleep tonight and dream that I'm going to kill somebody. But, you know, so, or I could say to you, I was so embarrassed, I thought I was going to die. And again, if you use that kind of language, it may come in the form of a picture or a pun in your dream. And so you said, like, just keeping the puns and the play on words, you said that you have disconnected from that business side of yourself because you saw that side. What did you say? Was it your dad?
Yeah, killed my father. His business obsession, in a sense, killed him.
Right. You said you are disconnected from that. And don't you think that's really funny? Because when you said the dream, because I did write down the dream, you said you couldn't reconnect with her.
Yes, exactly. That. Thank you. Thank you for showing me that. Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes. Thanks.
It's a language thing. It's like that dream. I'm on YouTube, you know, and one of the dreams that I talk about of my own is that I was dreaming that I had a series of dreams that I'm walking around on my knees. I call them my kneeling dreams. And in all these dreams, I was doing fine on my knees, except then I had one that I was walking on the lower campus of a university in Asheville, North Carolina, and it started snowing and I was trying to get to the upper campus and I couldn't stand up. And when I woke up, I said to Andy, my husband, it started snowing and I wanted to get up the stairs and I couldn't stand up. And he said to me, because he knows the theories, he said to me, why? Who are you having trouble standing up to?
Oh, good. Good for Andy. So what are the other points of entry? There's puns. What are some of the other points that you access?
It was great talking to you, actually, because you gave us examples of many of them. One was the feelings when I asked, what do you think you might be in a panic about?
Yes.
And another one is the action, which I just gave you an example of that when I said I was on my knees and I couldn't stand up. That's an example of an action dream. And he's like, why? Who are you having trouble standing up to? And another one is when you hear dreamers say, oh, I was trying to run, but I couldn't run. Or I was trying to speak, but no sound came out. So they want to, that's an action aspect of the dream. And I use that point of entry to say, well, is there something you're trying to say to somebody that you're not coming out with? Like, why is someone dreaming that they're trying to speak and no sound is coming out? Or maybe it's that they did say something to somebody and they're not really feeling heard. That could be another reason why you might dream that you're trying to speak and no sound is coming. And then there's the puns and play on words, which you did with the disconnect and the reconnect.
But also, as you're talking, I'm thinking of this person who I dreamed about, who is successful, and she hasn't become hardened business person. She's able to maintain her light side, her easygoing side, and yet be very professional.
That's right. So you have the answer to the issue. You want to be looking towards being able to connect with your business side, and that it doesn't have to be a cutthroat thing. It doesn't have to be a rigid cutthroat thing. You want to be connecting with your business side that gives you the ability to be successful, but also to be nice at the same time, not for it to be a situation like the people that your dad was dealing with.
Right, exactly. That's really helpful. And I guess people in our lives become symbols to our subconscious mind. Is that what you're saying in a sense?
Your subconscious is this incredible, vast database, or for those of us that are over 50, I call it a filing cabinet. And inside that database is every single memory and association that you've ever had since you're born. And so when you want to say something to yourself about any given subject, you know, you can choose people, you can choose places. Like, I have a client who, when he's very busy, dreams about New York. He's not dreaming about a person. He's dreaming about a place because his associations to New York are busy. And when he's busy, he dreams about New York. So,
but everything is a sense, a symbol to our mind. I mean, we associate everybody, everything in our lives with somehow it is represented to us in that sense. That's what I'm asking.
I have an argument with Andy, and there's certain feelings that come up for me that the argument makes me feel in a very specific certain way, because our subconscious is so sophisticated, it absolutely could blow you away. And before I leave, I have to tell you, like, my all-time favorite dream. But we are so, so sophisticated. And so maybe I will dream about a boyfriend that I had, you know, when I was a teenager. If that boyfriend made me feel in that very specific way, the way that Andy, my argument with Andy this week made me feel. Uh-huh. Because my subconscious will pull out the memory from the past, and it won't be about the boyfriend that from back then. It'll be about Andy this week, like yesterday. But I would be able to get better in touch with what I need to say to Andy by being in touch with those particular feelings, you know?
So that's, yeah. So we just went through one level of the dream, which is what, but when I met you, when we did some work, there were more levels, at least three or four levels of the dream, right?
Let me give you a continuation of that story about what was happening to me, and then I can give you like a quick and easy dream. Like,
yes.
After Andy said to me, when I was inside that series of the kneeling dreams, Andy asked me who I was having trouble standing up to. Because I'm thinking to myself, what is going on here? Who am I having trouble standing up to? So now I had another question. And the following morning, I woke up with a dream that I was kneeling in the office of a guy whose name is Neil. And that is a beautiful play on words. It's like, I get it. Like, your subconscious, you know, it's you over baseball bat, you know. So it's like, I get it, it's about kneeling. But so the way that I figured it out is I asked myself, what are the first two or three things that come to my mind when I think about Neil? And immediately I connect Neil to my brother, because Neil is a friend and business associate of my brother. And it was my brother who I was having trouble standing up to.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I understood what the current situation was about. I look back in the dream, and if I look at the setting, like, you know, the sets, like in a movie or a television show, the dream takes place in an office. And so I'm because I'm going to go deeper, so I'll just tell you very quickly that I grew up in a home with my mother wasn't European. She was born in Montreal, but she had a European background, like her parents were European. And my father was a Romanian. And in the house that I grew up in, we couldn't look. We were four siblings, and I'm the youngest. And I couldn't look at my father when I was 7 or 8 years old and he was yelling at me. I couldn't look at him and say to him, excuse me, I don't like how you're speaking to me. I'm going to leave the room now, because I would have ended up with a sore bottom. Like, that's considered very disrespectful.
I see.
Overinvested in shutting up and underinvested in speaking up. And take that with you your whole life, because they become your knee-jerk reaction. So it's not like I lost my ability to be able to speak up for myself. It's just that it's an under-exercised personality, similar to what happened. I'm disconnected from it, like you said about your business side, right?
Right,
so,
exactly.
And I was having trouble standing up to him. So usually in my family of origin, because I'm the youngest, when I had to speak up to an older sibling or even my husband or anybody, if I had to speak up for myself and I was aggravated with somebody, I would either land up crying, always crying, ridiculous, or, you know, well, let me just back up and say this. Neil, the dream takes place in an office. And I knew, because of where the dream took place, that I would need to make this appointment to see my brother also in his office, because if I would have met him at his home, in his home, I'm his younger sister. But in his office, I have more of a chance of being like Neil, because in an office, it's very business. And do you think if Neil was pissed off at my brother, he would be crying?
Right. Like,
right? He would be, I need to become like Neil, because if Neil was aggravated with my brother, he wouldn't be screaming at him. He wouldn't be crying. He would say it straight. He would say it straight, like an equal. And so, and I am my brother's equal. I mean, I had these dreams when I was 40. I mean, at 40 years old, at that point, you know, I'm not 7 years old anymore. And I don't have to shake in my boots like he's my father, because he is my equal. So I went into Andy's closet. This is very behavioral, what I'm going to say to you. It's not Freudian. It's very behavioral. I went into his closet and I borrowed a necktie. And
In real life, you weren't dreaming this.
I went into my husband's closet for the meeting with my brother, and okay. I wore wore my own sport jacket, but I put on like a white shirt, and I borrowed a tie from Andy so I'd get in touch with that male equal side of myself, not the little sister, but the male equal, that Neil part of myself. So I dressed the part. And I went and met him at his office. And I remember to this day that while we had this discussion, I was literally sitting on my hands, because I wanted to just like get myself in that mode about being an equal. And it was the first time I actually ever spoke to my brother, like when I was mad at him, I mean. It was the first time I ever spoke to him in a tone of voice the same way as I'm speaking to you today, just like a plain old equal. You know, and I changed the face of my relationship with my brother forever after, because once you do it once, it's like going to the gym and exercising a muscle. Once you try it on once, then you know you can do it. And the next time you do it again, in the next situation, you do it again. And before you know it, you're more and more comfortable about speaking up. Like, you know, I used to be worried about speaking up to my husband also, because he would like raise his voice at me, and I'd also be shaking in my boots like I'm 7 years old doing my knee-jerk reaction. And now it's 20 years later, and if Andy raises his voice to me, you better believe that I raise my voice back at him.
Knee-jerk reaction, that also refers to your knees, doesn't it?
You're fantastic.
No, it makes sense. We have to look for those cues, which is really fun. So I get it. You're no longer having
If you want to go deeper into the dream, at the first level, it was about that I was aggravated with my brother. Mm-hmm. But if you want a little bit deeper, then I would say to myself, well, where is it in my life? Because that's what I ask people to do, to go deeper. Think about the dream and the feelings that the dream has, and think about a story from the past that this reminds you of. And for me, it reminds me of my father. And so, you know, and it's so funny because you did the same thing also. You also went deeper today. Because
right. I said it reminded me of my father too. That's interesting.
Right. So now we're in the Freudian zone and we're going deeper, because the great thing about that is that if you realize, and I'm using both you and I as examples, it's so synchronistic. What happened here today? Oh my God. Yes. This is so weird how stuff like that happens. But yes. If you realize that my real issue is rooted in what happened for me with my father and my relationship with him, what's the prize I get? The prize I get from doing the Freud thing is that I now have more confidence going into the office to say to my brother what I'm feeling about our current situation, because I've realized it's not about my brother. It's about my father. It has nothing to do with my brother. And why should I be behaving in that worried way? And similarly with you, you know, looking at your whatever new projects that you're looking at for the new year, what you're going to be doing now that you've connected this thing to the fear, to really longing to the past and what happened to your dad, what's going to happen for you is that now that you've made that separation, you will be able to free yourself to behave, to act more inside of yourself that's like your producer friend.
Well, I still, as you talk about this, I still have a little, let's say, fear or hesitancy that because my father, in a way, became, in some sense, enslaved to his business and then it did him in, I have a little fear of that that comes up. And I don't think I quite have the solution like you of a way of integration.
Right, but if you be remembering your dreams over the next little while, you start getting some clues about the which road you're going to take. And you know what? You know, here's what I just thought of, because it already is starting to appear, even in the dream that you had this morning. Mm-hmm. This person, she leaves you her number,
yeah.
But then but she doesn't become that easy to get in touch with. So
right.
In other words, she's not enslaved.
Right.
Because people who are enslaved, they are always available and they're always right there. And so you also want to start exercising that balance because you have the awareness that you don't want to be enslaved. So sometimes you want to make yourself available and other times you won't.
I see. That's an interesting point. That's very, very good. The other thing is I realized that I also trusted her enough to give her my computer, which I probably wouldn't do to anybody. So there's a level of trust that seems to happen in relationship to this type of work or personal situation.
You need to start trusting that part of yourself. And it really, I always using the, and I'm overweight, so it's just funny how I always use this analogy about the gym, but it is like working on muscles, exercising muscles that you're not accustomed to. And by the way, this is the whole reason why I do dream work. This is it. I do it because I want to, in my book, I call it playing a different game on the back nine, even though I don't golf, because on the first 40 years, we do it our parents' way. My father told me, don't open up your big mouth. And that message I got. So I learned to shut up. I learned to keep my feelings inside. So I played it their way for the first 40 years. But in the second 40 years, on the back nine, you want to start being able to take back those parts of your personality that you are underinvested in or under-exercised in, and you want to start exercising that. And what you get for it is what Carl Jung called individuation. And he also called those sleeping parts of yourself your shadows. That's what they are. So whether it was Freud or Jung or Adler or Perls, what I have come to over these last 40 years of studying their philosophies is that they didn't have to fight the fathers of psychology. They weren't really that different from each other. You know, Freud called it maturation. Jung called it individuation. So I guess the goal is you put yourself in a very powerful position if you can access any part of your potential. Mm-hmm. And And for me, there's never such a thing as right or wrong. There's no such thing as good or bad, right or wrong. For me, it's about appropriate or inappropriate. Because if I am aggravated with my bank manager, for example, I'm not going to open up a mouth to him like I would to my husband. And in his case, it might be more appropriate to be a little bit nervous like I would have been with my father. So you want to be able to, if you have exercised more parts of yourself, you become very powerful if you just get to decide how you want to respond to each situation that comes your way, because you don't want to be stuck with your knee-jerk reaction.
Right, right. It's like a good actor can do many parts. You know, Meryl Streep just did this like Southern type of, alcoholic housewife, very different from who she normally plays, but it exercised a different part of her human capacity and expanded her probably her own sense of self. I mean, as we exercise these other parts of ourselves, if I exercise this business part of myself, it expands me into places that renew me in a sense.
Yes, exactly. And now you came full circle for me. And again, I have to say, this is why I love talking to you. You're so intelligent. I'm telling you, it makes my head spin. Because, and what you do when you get back these parts of yourself is now you are no longer who your parents told you you are, but now you become who you know you are, which is very different, you know? It's very different. It's like whatever it's like now sometimes I'm going to be selfish and sometimes I'm going to be giving. Sometimes I'm going to say yes and sometimes I'm going to be okay about saying no. Mm-hmm. Really?
So,
So you've individuated from your parents.
Right. So even though my father didn't tell me don't go into business, by what happened to him, it was sort of like a sign of, oh, I better stay away from that. So it's it was sort of like a telling of to me of that.
That's right. Because he showed you what enslaved looks like.
Right. And what dying for your business, and it really did kill him because he worked, he was like an engineer above this steel welding plant that eventually poisoned him with environmental toxins, you know, and that was a obvious, obvious to me, a demonstration of, you know, how your business can kill you. And so...
want that, but you also don't want, like what I talk about also is when I'm talking about the solution point, I call them all points of entry, by the way. And when I talk about the solution points of entry, one of them is called polarities. And that's what you and I are talking about. Like when you have these two polarities about being completely enslaved by your business to the point where it's going to kill you, or completely unbusinesslike.
Right. Yes, you're right. And that happens in our psyche. So because we avoid it, and you're saying to become the full human being, we need to get over these ideas we have and function the best way we know how without our own prejudices.
Into the middle. So
in other words,
you're not in sales, but if you were in sales, mm-hmm. I would say to you that if you have a client who absolutely drives you completely up the pole to the point where you're losing sleep over it, that maybe the exercise for you would be to move away and unenslave yourself, to free yourself a little bit from, you know, from that kind of personality. Or if it, depending on how bad it, but I'm just saying, like, you know, you start to look at business situations and people that you're in business with, and do I want to, you know, like I have somebody that I do business with, for example, because I have another career also where I do bookkeeping, and I have like one client never pays me. I'm always having to chase this person. And so you say to yourself at a certain point, do I want to be doing this? Like, how badly do I need that client? How right. bad is it it important? Do I want to be enslaved by that person to that point?
Right. So, but getting back to what you said before, is the dream is always pushing us, in a sense, to be a whole bigger person. Did you say something like that?
That's right. The dream is giving you suggestions of personality, people, personalities in your life that you want to be striving more towards, or sometimes it's a certain place, or sometimes it's an action. Like when people come to me with flying dreams, I'm always interested to know, well, what's going to happen? Is it going to be a situation where there's something going on in that person's life and they need to be flying away, like I was just discussing about that client? Mm-hmm. Or is it that actually they need to be present and the dream is reflecting that they are the kind of personality that runs away from things and doesn't deal with it? And maybe the dream is a message about putting your feet on the ground and staying still inside the conflict or whatever it is that's going on for you. Maybe it's not something you should be running away from.
Because in Gestalt, though, Fritz Perls, doesn't he say you are every part of that dream?
That's right. They all say that. I mean, Carl Jung said it's your dream. You're all the players. You're the actors. You're the director. You're the producer, and you're the sets. It's your dream, and so you are playing all the parts. And what typically happens is that your ego usually takes the part of the dream that you feel the most comfortable with, and you give out all the other parts of the dream to other people, places, or things. So you chose in your dream this morning, you chose the part of the person who's like reaching out for something that you can't really get in touch with.
In my dreaming state, that seemed like me. I was me who I am and the other persons were the other people, you know?
Right, exactly. But they are still representations of different aspects of your personality and your different potential.
So I guess so is everyone that you meet in the world, in your waking life.
Of course, yes, definitely.
Uh-huh. So then talk about taking the dream outside to waking life a little bit. Then if we find ourselves in a situation that may be uncomfortable, do we still use these same points of entry to look at that?
Well, when I work with a dream, it's funny that you're saying taking it out to waking life, because that's one of the ways I teach people to help come to the solution that presents itself in the dream. So there was one woman who was dreaming that she was at a picnic and there were ants all over the place that started swarming the picnic. And in the dream, she's trying to push them away with her hands, which mm-hmm. is not the appropriate response, because if you take that dream out into waking life, right, mm-hmm. you think that is that going to get rid of ants, like a swarm of ants? You can't get rid of them by pushing them away with your hands. That's not going to do much good. So her response in the dream is inappropriate. And my comment was, maybe you want to get the raid. And it turned out that her dream was about the fact that she was having an affair with a man who was, it was like getting out of control because he moved out of town and now it was harder for her to find excuses to make, to account to her husband where she was, because he moved an hour and a half away. She'd have to drive like an hour and a half out of town to be with the lover and then come all the way back. And that was the swarming ants. It was like the thing was not fun anymore and she wasn't having a picnic anymore. And so for me, it was like, get out the raid. Because
she wasn't having a picnic anymore. That's the key, right? She wasn't having a picnic.
It started out that there was just a couple of ants at the beginning of the dream. But by the time the dream finished, the ants were swarming. And I suppose, the small amount of ants was like his kids, her kids, the husband, the wife, like getting away from them. It was like a couple of ants, but they weren't really disturbing the picnic. But mm-hmm. once it started swarming, when he got transferred an hour and a half out of town And for me, I said to her, well, you need RAID. You have to get out the RAID, which was, you know, and so I'm always talking in metaphors. But the point is, we took the dream outside into waking life, right? Then we made the RAID is the way to cure the problem with the ants in a waking life situation. And then if you look at that, the answer is obviously either you're going to end the affair or you're going to end your marriage. Like, get out the RAID.
I see. But that was your solution. That wasn't hers.
Well, no, but all I can do is make suggestions.
Right.
What I can do is I could say that if I take that scenario out into waking life,
I see. Yeah.
You cannot get rid of ants by pushing them away with your hands.
The affair was no longer a picnic that she could control, huh?
Not working. That's right. So what are you going to do? It spurs the discussion, or we call it in waking life, we call it brainstorming. So you're not necessarily going to take my brainstorming suggestions because, you know, you can never do that. For me, the solution is RAID. Like, you have to do something that's going to fix the problem. And for me, that's what fixes the problem with ants.
Uh-huh. So the other, you said there's three levels of dreams, though, right? At least that you work with.
Just that I work with attaching the dream to the current issue. And then I look at the next level for me is the different parts of the dream representing different parts of you.
Uh-huh.
Solution getting way of getting to the dream. Then I will look at the Freudian aspect because I did like 8 years of psychoanalysis when I was 21 years old. I had a crisis in my life and I ended up in psychoanalysis. So my initial introduction to Sigmund Freud was that I did him. I studied him later, but my initial introduction was to do Freud, to experience him. And I really like Freud because Freud teaches us, and you and I illustrated it beautifully today, because Freud helps you understand why you're behaving today the way you are. Because it's coming from back then. And the Jungian thing, if you remember I was talking about my kneeling dreams during this conversation. If we want to look at my dream from a Jungian perspective, I would ask you, you know, instead of inside the family of origin, in a Jungian way, take it out to the wider world. And so I would say to you, where in stories or history or Bible stories or plays or, you know,
or myths and things like that. Myth, yeah.
Where do we find people kneeling? Mm-hmm. You have a guess?
Well, there's that famous story of Nebuchadnezzar who turns from a king into an animal, where he's kneeling on all fours as an animal. That's one myth that I know, story.
Me, the story that comes to my mind is kneeling in the face of the Lord.
Uh-huh.
See so many religions all through time, kneeling in the face of the Lord, and all my issues about standing up and my kneeling dreams had to do with authority figures. And what's the prize I get from doing a Jungian analysis of it? If I'm connected to the archetypal image of kneeling in the face of the Lord, if I'm connected to that, then I can say to myself about my father, was my father the Lord? No, he was just a plain old human being. He wasn't, and I didn't have to be so afraid of my father. He was a very nice man, actually. He had a temper, it's true, and he was had a European, you know, Jewish slant to him about respect. And all that's true, but he was also a really giving and loving man, and he was fiercely protective of the family, and he was really somebody I could depend on. So he wasn't God. He was like a plain old human being who made mistakes all the time. And it's not like any of us who are parents. I mean, parents don't get up in the morning and say, try and figure out how they can screw up kids today. I mean, parents don't wake up, and that's not their goal, is to screw you up.
Right.
Parents have the best of intentions, and my connecting on a Jungian level to my father not being the Lord, even though my father's not here anymore, it still lends to this feeling of forgiveness.
So are people continuously throughout their life still working on themselves? And have you found anyone reach a place where they have owned all those sleeping parts of themselves and have realized?
Not in the human race. Human race, no, we are not perfect. And we are always, we can always be better. We're always working on something.
Mm-hmm. Do dreams ever have more of a spiritual aspect? Like if you're flying and maybe you're having an out-of-body dream, are you actually out of your body? Or that's not really how you work because you're an analyzer as opposed to?
Well, for me, we are, as I said, we are so sophisticated. There's lots of, we're multitasking, and we are capable of so much more than we give ourselves credit for. So yeah, I look at dreams from the problem-solving way, but that doesn't mean to say that other stuff is not going on. Like when I go to New York on a business trip, or I go, I met you at a, where I was working at a spa, and so I go to these different spas and places to speak, and I have four daughters, by the way, and a wonderful husband. So when I go away on business, I need to access that business side of me, and I might dream about my father. And so on a psychological way, I could say that I dreamt about my father last night because I need to access that part of myself that knows how to get on the plane, you know, and get away, go away from the family, as opposed to my maternal mother's side. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But how do you and I know that my father also didn't visit me in my dream?
So there's that level. There's definitely, yes.
Sure, he does.
But your skill, I guess, and gift is to help people look at the psychology that will help them change their lives.
Yes, but I also so happen to be a spiritual person. And so when I dream about my mom or my dad, you know, there's times when, for me, I wake up in the morning and it's so psychological, it's screaming at me. And then there's other times where you will never convince me that that wasn't really my mother or my father there.
Right. Well, you know, looking over your notes now, I realize that the third level, and you did it before, is after we go to like the immediate and then maybe the Freudian, is like to look at what story or book or history does your dream remind you of.
That's right.
So I can't, but in my dream, I told you, I'm not sure.
You're talking about the Jungian level now?
Yeah, the Jungian level, I guess that's what you call it. Yes, the Jungian level is what does that story or that dream you told yourself, what story or myth does that remind you of?
So on a Freudian level, you ask yourself, what does that remind me of from my past, from my childhood, my family of origin? And then the Jungian thing, you do the same thing, but you ask yourself about what that makes you think of. Like, what story does that make you think of? And that's what you might want to spend some time thinking about.
Well, you know what comes to me about this dream I told you is that Terry Gilliam movie. You know who he is? He did that movie of this. I mean, he's done lots of movies. He's a former Monty Python actor, director, writer, and he did the Mysterium of what was this called? Who's the guy who played in The Sound of Music, the father? What's his name? The actor? He won an Academy Award last year.
Talking about
anyway, he did this movie. You know who I mean, right? Anyway, he did this movie where he plays this magician, and there was something about, I don't know, at the end of that movie, there was like, I don't know, I'm being very vague here, but there was where these people were sort of looking for him, but he was kind of on another level.
It was Christopher Plummer.
Yes, Christopher Plummer, that movie. By Terry Gilliam, and at the end of that movie, he kind of goes to another level, and these other people are living a sort of regular life. Well, that sort of seemed to me like the situation I was having with this woman producer. She was at one level, and I was at this other level that I was trying to get to.
But what I would do if that were my dream, by the way, now that you've made that connection,
yes.
I'm so looking at that, the plot and the story about that, what is it, a movie?
Yes, that movie.
I would be looking at that movie and all your associations to it and see how that, like, for example, one of the things I ask myself is, do I like the ending? Like, does that make sense? Does it fit for me and the story? Or would I have liked to see a different ending? Because in Jung's active imagination, you can change the ending, because if you change the ending for a story, it's the same thing as just changing your mind. You trigger something different. Do we have time for me to give you an example?
Yes, please. We have time. We have all the time we want.
Say, for example, if I go, you know, if you go downtown because you're going to buy a pair of shoes, and then you see a sweater in the window of the store and you like the sweater and you end up changing your mind. So, because we change our minds all the time, and we do that with pictures and stories, dreams as well. And just the idea of using Jung's active imagination can trigger a whole different creative problem solving. So when you have a little kid who's dreaming, you know, that there's a giant chasing him, you don't want to analyze like you would with an adult necessarily with the kid. You're not going to analyze what's going on this week that's making the kid feel like there's a giant chasing them. What you do instead is you use active imagination directly. And even though they're, it's the next day, you still say to the child, Mummy is coming into that dream with you. I am going to be inside that dream with you. And we are going to build a wall so high that the giant can't come over it. And so I'm in that dream with you. So even though you're talking in the present tense to the child, you have already triggered another picture. You're changing the person's mind. You're helping them change their mind. And it's not only helps them next time they have a nightmare about a giant, Mummy is in the dream with me, because now you've put yourself in the, you know, I've put myself in the dream with the kid. So next time they have that dream, not only am I going to appear there, but what I've also done in a metaphoric way is that whoever it is that's making the child feel afraid in waking life situation, suddenly now the child has more confidence because they're reminded that their mom is with them.
Right. Well, I don't know if that applies to this. Maybe it does. But okay, the movie is The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus. At the end of that dream, at the end of that movie, I mean, Christopher Plummer is watching this romantic couple who was sort of his daughter in this restaurant. And then you realize that in a way he's transcended the romance, and the main part of the film is about mastery and not romance, in a sense. That's my interpretation. Of course, anyone would interpret it differently.
Sure, it's your interpretation that is the only one that counts.
Right. Exactly. So that's how I would interpret that.
No, but did you hear what you just said? It's about mastery, not romance.
Right. Okay.
That's what you're dealing with. You're dealing about mastery.
Right, not the romantic idea of being successful or the image that goes along with it, but the mastering of something for myself, I guess.
Excellent. So, okay. So now you've related yourself to the Jungian way, and to take the Jungian way one step further, I would say to you as a fellow human being, isn't all of us on some level at some time, don't we have that all in common, us human beings, about this polarity about mastery versus the romance?
The ideal, yes. And I think that's what struck me about this movie so much. And that's, it was vague, the association, why it just came to me, but it came to me because somewhere my mind was trying to tell me this, or my subconscious.
Right. That's right. And the prize that you get, like, remember I was saying that the prize, I'm always talking about prizes. I must like prizes. That, you know, that when you're looking at the Freudian level, the prize I get in realizing that it's really about my father is that it gives me more courage to approach my brother, right? That's what you get for the Freudian thing. And what you get for the Jungian thing is connecting yourself to, like, not to be hard on yourself, because all of us are dealing with this same stuff. We all have authority figure issues, and we all have issues about mastery versus romance and finding kind of balance between that, you know, enslavement and freedom. We are all dealing with that on some level in different situations. And so you're not alone. Like, that's the prize you get for doing Jung. You're not alone.
Well, I think the Jungian part really pulls it all together. I mean, for me, it just really did. It really helped me see a whole other level to that dream that that puts the whole thing in perspective as, in a sense, pushing me or part of myself wanting me to be bigger than who I think I am, who my mind tells me I am.
Right. Right.
So I think that's a really key element to your work. It's very exciting in a way.
Yeah, it is. It is.
So,
Do you think it's cool? Because I think it's cool that that I brought forward the kneeling dream, and you brought forward this Hollywood computer and producer dream, and that in conversation we were able to work through to the deepest level on both of those dreams.
Yes, I think it's amazing. I think it's...
It gives you a good example of how my process works.
Well, the other thing I really like about your process when we did it in person is you let other people go around and you would say, if this was my dream, so... We're experiencing, so if I had that kneeling dream, if that was my dream, what would that mean to me? It might mean something totally different, but it would be an aspect. I mean, it would be, maybe it would mean to me that I was feeling less than who I could be. I mean, in a sense that was.
And when that's the great thing about working in a group, is that when you're in a group and you use Dr. Montague Ullman's method, which is the if it were my dream method, you are totally respecting that your database could not possibly be the same as mine or anybody else's, because each of us is, you know, while we have many similarities, which we were just saying, being in the human race, we are also, our experiences are as unique to each of us as our fingerprints are. Because, you know, the actual real feeling about kneeling or what is it that comes to your mind about a dog? You know, each of us has different memories, different associations, different feelings, and they can't possibly be exactly the same. So what you do when you say, if this were my dream, is you really respect the dreamer because countertransference is unavoidable when you're doing dream work.
What does that mean exactly, countertransference?
If I can't say to you what your dream is about, it's impossible because I can only access my own database and my own subconscious and my own memories and my own associations and judgments and everything else. So how can I possibly say to you, I mean, if you're dreaming about dogs, how can I say to you what dogs are about? Maybe I don't like dogs, or maybe I'm... And maybe you grew up with a dog your whole life and you love them. So you have to say, if this were my dream. And then what happens is the dreamer sitting in a room with 4, 5, 6, 10, 20 people gets the wonderful richness of hearing from the people around the room all their different projections or ideas about what the dream is about for them. And then the dreamer gets to pick and choose what fits for them and what doesn't fit for them.
Well, because somebody will have an insight that maybe I hadn't seen about if it was their dream that will add to my awareness.
Absolutely. And I could promise you this, that if we were on a radio show right now where people could call in live mm-hmm. and share opinions about what your dream was about. And but of course, if I was there, I would make them begin the sentence with, if this were my dream, because I don't trample on your associations. I want to respect you as the dreamer. But we would be able to hear so many other ideas from people about what that feeling is about being disconnected.
Like, well, I could ask if there's any phone calls out there. Doug, are you listening in? Doug is producing this at BBS Radio. And do you want to put to what's the phone number people can call if they're interested? Okay. Because we'll take maybe if there's someone around. If not, we'll just wrap up. But maybe someone's 888-429-5471. So if you're listening out there and you have an interpretation of your own or you want something to share, you can call in. So if someone calls, let me know, Doug, and we just put them right through. But yeah, usually the regular time for the show is at 10 p.m. East Coast time or 7 p.m. California time. But to sort of wrap up, Lainey, because I've been talking to Lainey Dolphin about her dream analysis work. What do you call the work?
I call it dream work. And my site is haveagreatdream.com. Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about so many aspects here, and it's all about helping us realize more of ourselves. So how would you put all that together?
Well, I would say that we are problem solving in our dreams. And if you are a person who remembers your dreams, you might want to look at them, because you can really propel your problem solving skills if you understand what the heck you're trying to say to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you also do private sessions with people on the phone, don't you?
I do Skype and I do telephone. Skype and telephone, because I have to be able to talk to the dreamer. I can't do an email thing back and forth, because I need to be able to talk to you to find out what your associations are.
So would they find you through your website? Or do you have a number? Or
Go to greatdream.com, and my email address is Layne at haveagreatdream.com, and you can find my email address anyway on the site. And there's a secure place where you can book a session, and I accept Visa and MasterCard.
Great. Well, how much is a session usually that you charge?
$50 for a half hour.
Well, that's very reasonable.
If somebody just wants to, you know, talk about what's the issue today, then definitely we can cover that within a half an hour space of time. And if you want to go deeper, then it's $100 for the hour.
And then you do ongoing sessions if people want to work with you like once a week or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's very helpful, especially if you're going through something, to do like regular sessions, because you really get to see how you're moving along on something when you're doing it like that.
Well, one more question. What do you say to someone who says, I can't remember my dreams? What do you say about that?
Well, the first and best way to remember a dream is intention, is to make a decision that you want to remember a dream and leave a paper and pen beside the bed. Because if you make a decision that you want to remember a dream, you probably will within a day or two. And another way that you could do it is, and when you get up, I should have said, start writing right away. Like, don't get off the bed. You have to catch it right away. And even if you get only like a few sentences, once you've started yourself writing the dream, you know, then you'll remember more even after you get up. But it's just at least to get the thing started. And another thing is, don't think that you have to remember a big, long dream with a beginning, a middle, and an end, because you would be shocked how much information you can access from one picture. Like, it's really true, that expression, a picture is worth a thousand words, because it really is. And I've somebody come to me with just one dream, and it says you get so much information out of it.
Well, you know, you really helped me today just looking at that dream, finding a deeper part of myself and seeing what I can do about it. But we, like I said before, we have four or five dreams a night, and most of them go unanalyzed. But is there a part of our psyche that seems to sort of know what it is? Because having known and having brought the conscious awareness to what the dream was telling me, it's much more empowering, whereas most dreams are lost or get unexamined.
No, they're not. They're never lost, because you're problem solving anyways, and you're going to figure out what you want to do about something that's bugging you anyway. If you're wanting to quit that job, you're dreaming about it, and believe me, if the decision you're making is that you want to quit the job, you will end up quitting it. But if you analyze the dream, you might quit it in the next 2 weeks instead of in the next 6 months.
I'm just saying, the analysis is so helpful, and yet it doesn't happen most of the time. But we're trying to work at it anyway. So I guess I'm saying the human interaction and the conscious awareness is, in a sense, it seems a valuable part of the dream.
Absolutely, it is a valuable part.
And but it goes unexplored mostly. That's the thing.
I know, but not, you know, so then there's a reason to want to inspire yourself to remember. You know, Dr. Robert Bosnak, who I love so much, he is like one of the nicest people I've ever come in contact with. And he's just a brilliant dream analyst himself. And he's a Jungian analyst. His one of his exercises about remembering your dream is to sit in a chair and look at your watch on your hand and just really, really look at it. And, you know, how the hand is moving, what the numbers look like. And then close your eyes and try and picture your watch in your mind. And then spend a few minutes doing that. And then open your eyes and look at the watch and see how well your recall is. And then look around the room and think about all the things that are around the room. How many pictures are on the wall? Where are they placed? What are the colors? What do they look like? And spend some time looking around your space. And then close your eyes and see yourself walking around the room. And then you can do like another exercise where you close your eyes and you walk around your childhood home. And you can do that as well. But those kind of exercises really wake up that part of your brain that knows how to recall. And doing stuff like that during the day can really help you remember your dream tomorrow morning.
Oh, thank you for that. That's good. That's good for those people. I mean, I remember my dreams, and I love actually analyzing my dreams. Actually, my dreams, sometimes in the dream, I could be analyzing a dream as a dream. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I could be dreaming, but also analyzing the last dream I had as part of the current dream.
Right. Oh, that's very cool. Are you saying that you become semi-conscious in the dream, like you're lucid dreaming?
Yeah, like I'm lucid dreaming, but I'm analyzing the previous dream, but I'm still dreaming.
Right, that's great.
Yes,
it's like I was telling the kids last night that yesterday morning when I woke up, and I'm very frightened of spiders. I just hate them. But yesterday morning, I woke up and I saw a spider, like a spider that's bigger than normal. And instead of the web being attached on different parts, the web was suspended outside my wall. And I saw the spider like crawling towards the wall in this suspended web. And I said to myself, because I was like just waking up, but I said to myself, oh, I'm having a hypnagogic image. And I knew, obviously, there's not a spider there. So I just watched it, because those hypnagogic images, they are so real, but they only last for a couple of seconds when you first open up your eyes. And I knew that I better watch it because it's going to go away in a second, you know?
But it had meaning. Actually, I would, if it was my dream, I would say you're learning to face your fears and look at that spider.
Well, there you go. And I'm sure you're right to connect to that.
Yes. But anyway, I'd love to have you come to New York and maybe we could do an evening about dreams, maybe with some other dream people, like a panel about how to look at our dreams.
That'd be fun. I would love to do that.
And so how would you end a group? Like if you're one around, how do you, because you can go on and on and on. I mean, for levels and levels, how do you usually end a session?
I usually end a session in a group by asking the dreamer how they're feeling and are good about what happened. That's how I end. And I will end our experience the same way. How do you feel about the connections that you made to your dream?
Well, I feel amazing. And I mean, having that dream and not knowing what it meant to me, I felt like I was in a bit of a fog and lost and searching, what could this mean? And then working with it, I feel clear and on track, and as if the subconscious part of me was leading me in the direction I wanted to go in anyway.
That's fantastic.
And how do you feel?
I really enjoy having conversations with you, Alan. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Lainey. So next time, maybe we'll take phone calls if we do another show at some point.
You can tell your listeners that if they email me and we connect up for a time to do a consultation, that I give out my phone number and they can call me or we can do Skype. It's all good with me.
Okay, so for email, that's Lainey, LAYNE at haveagreatdream.com.
That's it.
And your website is haveagreatdream.com. And this was a very nice dream, I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
So we'll be in touch. I'll let you know when this is posted online, and you could link to that and do everything you want to do.
And you know what I'm going to do tonight, of course.
What are you going to do tonight?
Turn on the Apple TV, and I'm going to watch The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Oh, really? I'm interested to see what you think about that movie.
Okay, cool.
Because the movie itself is a dream.
I mean, really?
It's about dreaming and levels of dreams. And yeah, I'm curious about what you think.
Okay, very good. I'm going to watch it.
All right, and let me know, okay?
I will.
Thank you, Lainey.
Don't forget, come to Montreal.
All right, maybe I'll come to Montreal over the winter, and then I'll let you know when we could do something in New York as well.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right. I've been talking to Lainey Dalfen, Dalfen, who's a dream analyst who I think you're more than that. You really help people realize more of who they are. That's how I would say Lainey's work is about. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, you could email me at newrealities@earthlink.net or check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening tonight.